Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with the privilege of Charlie Baum, co-founder of Cool Culinaria, which is a collection of vintage and food and beverage memorabilia from the past, what, century?
Well, we go from late 19th century, 1880s, through 1970.
Yeah.
So mostly 20th century, but got some oldies in there.
Yeah, but you're not just a collector. You are a restaurant lifer, a generational restaurant lifer, from your grandparents to your father, now dealing in the wares and the artwork that was on the walls of those restaurants. Let's talk a little bit about your past. your sultry past.
There we go.
Your grandparents owned a place up near Saratoga called Gross and Baum.
Right, in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Yeah. And what was it? Was it a restaurant? Was it a hotel?
It was a Victorian hotel, which I believe they owned after somewhere around 1920 through mid-1960s, with a fabulous kitchen, dining room, a gambling parlor at one time, great old wicker rocking chairs on these vast porches, and you know, a fountain in the park-like setting where you parked your Model T.
Seems very Dirty Dancing to me.
I don't think that got to that year in Saratoga, but it was a great, great experience for me. To this day, I still remember the sights and the smells of the kitchen, the people that worked there, not the smells of the people that worked
yeah.
there. But the camaraderie in the kitchen, one of my favorite things was going out back and using the water pump.
So, I mean, yeah. You literally grew up in the kitchen there. And that parlayed itself into your father's life as well,
right.
Who was a restaurateur here in New
Correct.
York. The Notorious. Well, not Notorious. That's
all right.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd
like Joe Baum.
Right.
Your father owned, operated which restaurants?
Well, his career started in New York in about 1953 or so. It wasn't quite in New York. It was in Newark, New Jersey, at the Newark Airport, a restaurant called The Norker.
Yeah, that must have been a hard one to pronounce for New Yorkers.
And it still is. from there, what was wonderful about that place was as it overlooked the runways, which were probably about two in those days. But it was the beginning, I think, of his restaurant stage life, if you will, with Fleming desserts and three clawed lobsters and gigantic oysters, etc. At any rate, so from there he came to New York, working with the Restaurant Associates, and he developed somewhere around a couple hundred restaurants in his lifetime. From there was the development and the opening of former the 12 Caesars, La Fonda del Sol, Four Seasons already. From there, several restaurants. He opened his own place, Aurora, which had a short but happy life. And then all the way through Windows on the World, it's when it opened in 76, and again involved, sadly, right before its demise, and a lot of rainbow room in between.
Yeah, a lot of rainbow room. Now, what's funny is, did you push away against working in restaurants for most of your life?
Well, let me say this in one word. naturally. Or maybe naturally.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you know, I had this wonderful vicarious, you know, childhood, and as I got older, kind of living in the privilege of being, you know, one of his kids and having a lot of places to eat and been given great attention to. But it was difficult to imagine a kind of professional life in the restaurant business for a long time, because my father had a pretty big personality.
Yeah.
And a pretty public one. And, you know, who wants to compete with that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And we were discussing right before going on air about nepotism, you know, especially in the restaurant industry, you know, having to earn your chops. You actually went to restaurant school.
I did. Eventually, after you know a couple of years of conversation, he and I decided that it might be reasonable for me to approach the restaurant business. I made a point of going through the New York restaurant school here to help, you know, give me my merit badge before, you know, I stepped out into the restaurant world here in New York.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the aesthetics of restaurants.
Yes.
Because, you know, prior to working at, or as you said, living in the Rainbow Room for, you know, a dozen years.
That's right.
You were a photographer, or worked in image making.
Yes.
Going to film school at NYU.
That's correct.
Martin Scorsese was a professor of sorts to you.
I was our production teacher for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were in this very vibrant and creative, you know, scene here in New York.
I was very happily, you know, living here in New York, I guess for most of my life I have been. But part of what I did actually learn and become sensitive to and impressed by, again, having the privilege of being in a lot of my father's restaurants, is seeing the work of, you know, incredible designers, mm-hmm. Architects, graphic designers, you know, beautiful material. That really, you know, absorbed a lot of it in terms of appreciating the impact it had on the guests.
Yeah, and as a travel photographer too, you must have seen restaurants around the world.
I did, and I left my imprint in several by probably consuming more than one person should at any given time. Anyway,
yeah. Were there design firms that, you know, did the interiors for all the restaurants?
No, it depended. I mean, my father worked with Hugh Hardy on the Rainbow Room, of course, and on the last iteration of Windows. Alexander Girard, very well-known designer, who created the interiors of La Fonda del Sol and the really absolutely stunning graphics, which still have great impact today. Of course, Philip Johnson at the Four Seasons. So, again, I, you know, when my father would come home, you know, with an armload of plans and they would unravel across the dining room table.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot to learn and it was great.
Yeah, but that's exciting to see the aesthetics unfold of a restaurant.
Absolutely.
Because food, you know, you see so many pictures of food this day, you know, today, but there isn't as much of a focus of the artist behind the, you know, the foundation of the restaurant, the walls and the decor. And
that's correct. And, you know, and one brilliant human being I should mention is Milton Glaser.
Yeah.
Who my father worked with quite a bit in the later years, and
best known for I Heart New York, but has had his imprint
right.
on many restaurants.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, and I think that really solidified the impact of graphics on me, as well as understanding the impact that graphics have, you know, within the environment of a restaurant.
Yeah. So you've been collecting this paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia? This is important stuff.
But this memorabilia. Yeah. For the past, you know, however many decades. However many years.
There you go.
Do you remember that first piece that you held, that menu, that, you know, woodblock poster, that piece of restaurant lore that you found collectible?
You know, that's a tough one. I remember probably I was somewhere around 10, 11 years old, 12 years old, when I think I held the Four Seasons menu in my hands. And it's, you know, in the... the brilliance of it is in its scale, the materials, rice paper. It was very tall. It still is, I guess. And images of the icons of the seasons, of the individual seasons, which are still used today, were just, I thought, just incredibly fabulous. And of course, you open this huge tablet almost, and I guess as a 12-year-old or whatever, you know, no one could see me when I opened the menu up, but that was fine with me because I got lost in the language. In the typeface, if you will, the general design of the menu, and I thought this was really just an amazing, you know, something I was holding in my hand and was meaningful.
Yeah, yeah. Are you like hypercritical of restaurants these days, of typeface, of, you know, menu design?
Not really. You know, the I think the understanding of what, you know, guests needs maybe you know, in this century versus you know, the 1930s, the 1960s is different. It was unimaginable, the, you know, the potential for, you know, quick printing and changing menus daily and still looking, you know, incredibly fabulous, and didn't exist too long ago.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, we're now getting used to reading things on video screens in a certain kind of places we eat quickly.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you lose the tactile, the archival nature of some of those things by being so temporal?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, it doesn't necessarily diminish the, you know, the dining experience. It's just different.
Yeah. So, I mean, at your father's restaurants or you going to other people's restaurants, how many menus were taken? How many things were stolen? I'm sure people were collecting on the sly as well.
That is a number I'm not admitting. let's leave it at several.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's cool to have these relics that you actually want.
Well, I think this is going back a bit, and still today, I'm sure that the quality of the physical menu is one level of impact on a diner, and of course, people, you know, not too long ago, several decades ago, used to write their names in the menus and take them home as souvenirs of being a very meaningful representation of experience.
Yeah,
you know, Harry and Sally. Are not the only ones, but you know, couples who were on a date, and they would circle the, you know, the 35-cent the sandwich and the 15-cent milkshake, and it would be dated, and hopefully they lived happily ever after.
Yeah, I love that line you just said, the quality of the physical, you know, because things existing in such a non-physical nature, you know, online or you know, in some kind of digital form. Yeah. And it's funny talking to someone who worked in analog photography, then having to deal with digital, that, you know, it is a fleeting.
Well, I think
thing.
If you if one considers the impact of the tactile experience, it's obviously one of the senses, which is, of course, what satisfying, you know, dining is about. And to be able to have your body, exaggerating the point, is to, you know, touch something. And even today, when we, in our own menu collection, when we are picking up something that's 50, 60, 70 years old, the quality of the paper is different, and there's a certain fragility, and you feel almost like, you know, you've dug up this little archaeological thing, and you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know? But it's great because you actually have it in your hands.
Yeah. And let's talk about cool culinaria.
Great
which,
idea.
Yeah. which is so cool. I mean, it's such an apropos term. These menus, these prints, these posters, I mean, it crosses the spectrum. What other kind of materials do you collect?
Well, there, you know, on the beverage side, there's the whole world of books.
Yeah.
So I've got my own collection of meaningful, you know, cocktail history related books, you know, from the Jerry Thomases all the way up. So that's one area also that Cool Culinary is going to launch very soon. As we're going to go from the pure restaurant side, and we're going into now the cocktail world as well.
Oh,
so
cool.
Bars, saloons, and other kinds of dives where this material will be, you know, represented.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you source all these things? It's not like you're going to bars and saloons and asking to go in basements and dig around.
That's mostly true. But there's, you know, there's various sites online that, you know, we're tuned into all the time. There are people who know that we're utilizing these menus who are beginning to get in touch with us. There are the little roads you drive unintentionally in the country somewhere, and it says antiques, and, you know, all of a sudden there's half a dozen, you know, original diner signs from the 1950s,
yeah.
Which they say, listen, we can't sell these. Are you interested? And I say, gone.
Yeah.
It's taken, yeah. They could really happen anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Have you found signs of, you know, restaurants foregone, but that you attended as a child and remember?
Well, can I say this without dating myself. No. It was the Dairy Queen in 1902.
Yeah.
No. There are some in New York, Child's Restaurant. Think of some of the chains of, you know, Schraff's, those kind of things, but places kind of in the 50s and 60s. Some of the later menus, you know, I would say post 19, because we say we go up to about 1970, there seemed to be kind of a turn in the way menu graphics worked, and the quality of the imagery in the paper and the printing processes, etc., became a little less special in my mind. Not to say they weren't great and beautiful menus, but they didn't have the same quality of the really extraordinary, you know, graphics that you know, we presented Cool Culinaria.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break and go back to 1890 and Café Anglais in France.
Fantastic.
Go forward
looking forward to
the 50s, 60s, and beyond.
Here we go.
Excellent. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the heritageradionetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Charlie Baum of Cool Culinaria. And it's coolculinaria.com, right?
That's correct.
Because I want people to go to the site and actually see some of these amazing images, you know, going back over 100 years, like you said before.
Coolculinaria.com it is.
Fantastic. And we have a couple of these images in front of us. And it's hard to explain how striking these are without actually seeing them. But, you know, the complexity is not that high. It's, well, I mean, it is, but there aren't many colors. There's high contrast. Everything is very straightforward, but very poignant and, you know, iconic.
Well, there's a lot of boldness in delivering the message of the spirit of the restaurant or the club, what have you. And so the ones that we are attracted to are those that, you know, represent either a lot of energy, a lot of color going on the page. You know, a lot of direct message of that you can't miss, particularly when you see, you know, things that are, you know, figurative. Anything you're looking at there, I'm happy to describe.
Yeah, well, the Café Anglais in France,
yes.
1890, it has a face on the moon, a child with a giant spoon feeding that moon face, and this beautiful-looking menu, too, which I'm assuming is some kind of, you know, price fee, you know, menu.
Well, in those days, you know, a lot of things were handwritten or spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at the very beginning of various printing processes. including lithography. The representation of images became available more widely than ever before. And this particular one is one that we love so much at Cool Culinary. It's kind of become our own, iconographic image, which we have on a lot of our literature, etc.
Yeah.
Of this moon face with a child holding a spoon trying to feed the moon.
Yeah,
it's really splendid.
It's a wonderful icon, and you know what's so striking about it too is that you do see that handwritten nature, you know, and there aren't many restaurants that do that here in New York. Chanterelle was kind of famous for it for years with Karen Waltuck writing
That's
out
correct.
Menus
yeah.
every day.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, with the advent of Photoshop and printing, you know, to keep daily specials, like you said, it's easier to have it all on there and print it out and just let it rip.
Absolutely, yeah. But there's a certain charm when you look at the handwriting of the, you know, late 19th century person.
Yeah.
I don't say versus my handwriting.
Yeah.
I would advise reading a menu that I've written.
But, yeah, yeah. Okay. I love the Bill Miller's Riviera. It's such simple colors, but the palette, the tone is so of that era and so vibrant.
There is Bill Miller's Riviera is one of my favorites. It was a nightclub just on the other side of the Hudson River. You know that Hudson River Riviera, where near the George Washington Bridge, and it was a nightclub. And the colors that we can see here, anyway, in the studio, were, you know, this very very sharp blue and bright yellow. And it's the kind of modified by this tan color underneath the bright blue of the lettering. You'll have to come to Cool Culinary to see it.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, what's so striking about these things is that, you know, we see restaurant graphics or restaurant logos. And, you know, that's emblematic. But this shows you the space itself. This shows you the setting of, you know, Bill Miller's Riviera and where it is and the mood. You know, there's such a setting in these images.
I think they're again, a different kind of thoughtfulness when there was less choice in terms of how to represent these places, you know, by printing at least, so that the thinking of how we're going to make this be translatable.
Yeah. Let's actually talk about printing, because you mentioned lithography. Can you explain that process a little? Because I'm not sure everybody knows. No?
Including me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, it was placing, a specific color dye by layers, by a set of matrix.
It was very, you know, it was very time consuming and labor intensive. There's certain, I think I'm correct in saying this, a certain lithographic processes by which most of us know a lot of poster production. The late 19th century, the printing of these menus was not much different. Certainly a different scale, etc. A menu is a little bit smaller than a poster.
But
very, very similar in terms of what the energy and the amount of time it took to produce.
But I like
one.
Hearing the word time-consuming. Yeah. You know, I like hearing that it actually took an amount of thought and effort to print out a menu, in a sense.
Well, I think that's, you know, adds another layer of impressiveness, you know, for us. To understand that part of it also. And I think when you see these things on Cool Culinary, that you'll get an idea of the difference in the eras that these menus were produced and an understanding of not just who ate there, but who else, you know, participated in the creation of them. And fortunately, you know, several artists were employed.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. That's a great thing, hearing that there are commissioned artists, you know, working for restaurants.
Yeah.
You've named a few of the designers, but do you know the names of the artists behind some of these graphics?
We're working on this aspect for the Cool Culinary site to celebrate the artists who created a lot of these things. And some of them will be surprising. There's a series of guys that produce these very famous menus for the Hawaiian Islands, for a lot of the shipping companies and cruise companies in the 50s. A guy named McIntosh was one of them, and they look almost like they've been painted by hand, and incredibly colorful, and with a lot of images of local people. And they're very highly collected, and they're very impressive to look at. But even someone as surprising as Ansel Adams provided the photography for the Yosemite Lodges and their menu covers.
Yeah, that's kind of that's
so it's interesting. So it really ranges from the hand created to a photographic process also.
Yeah, and then taking out the artist touch, not saying that this doesn't take a, you know, deft hand, but these duotones that you have in the section called Dinerville on your slide right now.
We love Dinerville.
And they're hilarious, too, because they're simple little harkenings back to that day and age. Some, they're on blue and white prints. Some say minimum check 10 cents, home-style cooking, pay today and trust tomorrow, ladies served at tables only, delicious Italian-style spaghetti. Where are you finding these quips and phrases?
Sometimes you just get lucky and you trip over these things, and when you're not even particularly looking for them. Several of these, I found at a roadside antique shop that's only open 2 days a week, and it happened to be their closing weekend at the end of last summer.
Yeah.
And, you see everything else on the wall, and suddenly I said, oh, my goodness, what are these? And anyway, so you can have them all if you'd like. And I said, that's what I was saying before. You even when you're not looking, you can find these things. And that's where I found several of the diner signs. And my partner's found some, Barbara's found some in other places. She's got a great eye also.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you traverse the country, if not world, for these relics as well, right?
It's like, anything else that you can't help. We all have our own habits. This is mine, you know. Yeah, always travel. I was with my family in Seattle a few months ago. And as we were kind of touring around, I said, would you forgive me for leaving you for the next half hour or so? And I dropped into this old print shop, and it turned out, wait a second, he was clearing off, blowing off the dust in the bottom of desk someplace. Oh, here's a box of stuff, So I found one great piece from there. So
that's awesome.
You never know.
Now the ideals that were in these restaurants that were behind these, images, do you see that in today's restaurants?
Ideals in terms of the intent of quality to deliver to the guests?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we see so much DIY nature in local sustainable movement in restaurants today. It's funny that it's moved away from that as far as making these kind of visual things.
Well, I think that, currently, and we should thank all the guys that preceded us and who have, generated the history of the restaurant business. And dining out, without being academic about it, because this stuff, the information is really fun to uncover and to learn about. But I think what's happened now is there's so much opportunity for individual expression and the expectation of people who do go out to eat to have a varied experience. And it depends, where you live, where we are right now. For instance, at Roberta's, you don't necessarily find, in everybody else's neighborhood, but it certainly is just perfect for here. There are all kinds of dinings where you say, do it yourself. A lot of people now prefer to cook at home.
Yeah.
Because there's such a different kind of quality of foodstuff available, for instance. But dining out, it's the same way. There's a million great ideas, and happily there's 100,000 of them that are working.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more choice now than there was before. And I think before also people would go out, certainly not as regularly now. I mean, it's hard to imagine, the restaurant business without credit cards. But you know what? They didn't exist before the 50s. So there was a whole other expectation and preparedness you had to have to take your family out to a special occasion.
Yeah.
Place, so it is different.
So where do you take yourself and your family out? What are you drawn to in New York from a visual standpoint?
Oh, boy, that's a good question, too. Sometimes I really like to focus on my plate.
Yeah.
because there's so much stimulation, and sometimes there's a lot of things which I don't necessarily get.
Yeah.
Why is this place looking like this? So sometimes the big showy places, I won't mention any names, have a certain soft spot for me because of my father's theatricality, if you will, in a lot of the places that he created. But one of our favorite things to do with our family is we do our sushi regular.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's easy. There's not a lot of visual distractions.
Yeah.
We know what we want, and the plates are always beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's so funny that you draw your eyes to the plate and away from the walls and away from, all the other aesthetic.
Yeah, but that's just me. It's totally fantastic how other people, are drawn to the much bigger picture in the environment, from who's there to how big and beautiful and fabulous the place is and, everything good that eventually comes out of the kitchen and you know, this is for another show. I could carry on about this for a long time. Okay.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite restaurants that you miss that are no longer, that held this theatrical nature, that had these posters that you have in your collection?
Well, there's, you know, we also have these posters. I got to look. One was the Norker restaurant, which we spoke about earlier, which I finally uncovered one very recently.
Oh, yeah.
A few weeks ago. We got an email on our Cook Culinaria website from someone who says, I love everything you have, but do you have anything related to the Norker? I said, well, that's unusual.
Yeah.
So anyway, so fortunately we didn't, now we're communicating with this person. Something that's not on the website, though, which I do miss dearly, is this restaurant, La Fonda del Sol, which is the spectacular restaurant, and what was known, then known as the Time Life Building in New York. And if you talk about the visual impact, this is the Alexandre Girard Latin American restaurant, where I think if I ever had a light bulb go on about the impact of the visual, you know, in restaurant experience, that was there.
Yeah. What was it about La Fonda del Sol that was so different from prior?
It was the there was an open kitchen with incredible graphics. There was the graphics program throughout the restaurant, the menus, there's the matchbooks.
Yeah.
The match strikers that were on the table. Very colorful food, great kind of noise. There was some entertainment there. So these, you know, this dancing quartet would come by with, you know, with their Cuban heeled boots, you know, while you're, again, I was 10 years old or whatever, and I thought, you know, this is just an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And it impacted me a lot.
Yeah. Truly dinner and a show.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. 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 But I think when you see these menus at Cook Culinaria, that you realize that the impact that the menu also created, when you sat down and you held this in your hand, it created a different kind of anticipation of what your experience was going to be. And of course, the restaurant needed to live up to that. And then you got to leave with it.
Yeah.
And many of these restaurants from the, say, 40s and 50s and probably earlier, they would have these menus, just ask for a menu if you'd like to take one home. And inevitably, they were smaller and they would have a fold in them with a place for a little postage stamp.
That's awesome.
So you could send a menu to your whoever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's great. Yeah. To share the experience.
Yeah. Well, if you weren't able to get a takeaway from the 50s, you can go to coolculinary.com and relive that bygone
era. Sure, come
era.
Visit us and travel with us.
Excellent. Yeah, and I'm excited to see what else you uncover. Now, if people are looking for things from specific restaurants and eras, can they contact you directly? And
sure, just email us at info@coolculinaria.
Yeah.
And come to the website, see what's there. You'll get an idea of the kind of the genres that are up. But we have a large curated collection,
you know,
that will continue to tap into. And of course, we're getting new material all the time.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited to, as I said, keep on seeing what you collect and what you
good. We look forward to bringing it to you.
Excellent. Thank you again, Charlie.
And thank you for being a fabulous host and inviting me to be here with you. It's a great day.
I do my best. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkell, hoping to have you back here.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.